Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Of Terry's talk, and after taking last week off, David Campbell, Terry Pluto. Terry, how are you? I was off last week. What did I miss?
Nothing. No, you missed NBA free agency. You missed never-ending speculation on Deshaun Watson. You missed the Guardians were really good, and then they got really bad. That's all.
That's all. Well, let's get into some of this. I was able to get to Port Clinton for a couple days, and that was good, and got away from a computer. So it's always good to recharge a little bit. Hey, so the Guardians, man, 2 out of 3 to the Yankees, they lost. And now heading into Wednesday afternoon's game, when we're taping this, they've lost 3 straight to the Tigers. This has been a grind, Terry. 3 doubleheaders in 7 days, 2 doubleheaders in 3 days. It does just, it wreaks havoc on the pitching staff. And it's just a long days for everybody, including Joe Noga, who's been covering the games for us. Pretty tough grind here, and it's hard for a team, especially a young team like this, to battle through that.
Well, it shows up your lack of depth and that kind of – I mean, they've lost 11 out of 15 is really their whole thing. Remember after they won like 10 out of 13, they've been team streak pretty much all year, David, if you think about it. And probably because of some of their youth. And I also think their starting pitching has not been as dominant as they hoped. And that's a way to get out of this. I mean, if you look at what happened in Detroit, yeah, they didn't hit much, but they didn't pitch very well either. Now, they didn't defend very well. I mean, a lot of that stuff. So we'll just have to see how they play out of it. But when Jose Ramirez is not being Jose Ramirez, he has only 1 RBI in the last 18 games. That was going into yesterday. I didn't see what he did yesterday. And I don't care what he says. That thumb is bad. This reminds me a few years ago when he had a great first half, and then he hurt his hand. And the second half of the year, he just didn't hit the ball very hard or anything. So I would, if I were them, I would go look at that thumb again or arrest him for a few days or something.
Whether well, he likes it or you not. You know Jose, he doesn't like to sit. He wants to be in there every day. It's like even getting him to take a regular day off when he's not injured is a challenge for Tito. And so he's going to want to be in there. So things got so bad last night, Terry, what was 11-4 and Sandy Leon worked the final 2 innings as a position player pitching. And Joe Noga had this in his story. He dropped his ERA from 7.5 to 6.43 last night. So, but they've used a position player in the last 10 games 3 times. I mean, that's just like you talk about team streak. When they lose big and you have guys like Sandy in there pitching, but I was just going to ask Terry. So they're 4.5 games behind the Twins right now after last week's big series here against Minnesota. But can they recover from this? I mean, there's a lot of time left.
Oh, sure, because I don't think the Twins are that good either because of their lack of pitching, and they struggle. So, they can. But if you keep getting crushed by Detroit and then they go to Kansas City, that makes it difficult. But Jose's injury, I think, has impacted the lineup. And then, remember, Oscar Gonzalez. Now, he was cooling off some, but he was playing well, and he brought a lot of energy to the team. And let's see what was Oscar hitting when he got hurt. So when he got hurt, you know, Oscar was hitting, let's see, he was batting pretty well. All of a sudden, I'll tell you, I just flunked. We will get Oscar's numbers in a moment. So I think he was up almost to 300. And I'm just really, you know, it's one of those things. We didn't know what to expect. I picked him under 500 for the year. And so I guess that's it. But it's, you know, we get our hopes up. And I have to admit, I'm a sucker for a young team that has real prospects, not just young and bad. You know, young with reason for hope. You know, my guy Owen Miller now, all of a sudden he's been in a terrible slump, and so it's just you know, you just really want to see the basically having patience.
Yeah, and go back to Oscar Gonzalez. He's batting 285, a 315 on base percentage, and a 431 slugging percentage. So you're right.
746. You know, I found them finally too. I mean, the guy had, how about this? You know, 123 at bats. He had 12 doubles, a couple of homers. You also just knew when he was in the lineup, if you were facing him, yeah, you know, this is a guy that might hit the ball hard. Even lately, Stephen Kwan, by the way, is looking to me like he's getting worn down some. Which has not been, you know, he's been able to hang in there, and I mean, he's still batting 270, but you know, he's struggled some too. So right now it's just a big mess. Now the question you have to ask, David, is what do you do about it?
Well, yeah, let's talk about that. And one guy we were talking about before we started taping here was Miles Straw, and man, his batting average, he's below the Mendoza line now, Terry. He's down to 194. Mm-hmm. And to have somebody like him that you want to put at the top of the lineup who's struggling that much, it hurts the entire offensive output when you have someone there who's not producing in that top part of the lineup where he should be. What do you do with Miles Straw? What do you think they should do with him?
About that is, you know, this is a guy that has had a fair amount of big league at bats. It's not as if, you know, he's got, okay, for his career, now his batting average is down some for his career because of the season, but he has 1,042 big league at bats, career batting average 246. In fact, if he's hitting 246 with an on base percentage of 330, you take it. But I'm looking at this. I mean, his last 30 games, he's batting 124, and he gets some walks, but I don't know what happened. I watched his swing and that. It's not like you see a tremendous amount of flaws, but like when he hits the ball, it doesn't go anywhere. Probably they have all the velocity and those kind of things you look at. But, you know, I mean, I was looking at, you know, his different time. When he was with the Astros, you know, the year the Guardians traded for him, he had 325 at-bats for the Astros. This is 2021. And he batted 262. Then he came here for the last 60 games, and he had 285. You know, so that's it. And, you know, with Houston, he batted 269 another year. So, yeah, there's no reason to just write him off. But this is hard. I mean, he does have a minor league option. You know, do you send him to the minors? I don't know. That's a question they have to ask. Because then who plays center field? You just hate to see him looking so hopeless.
Yeah, I mean, the Oscar Mercado reacquisition doesn't really play much into this because, I mean, there's a reason that they let him go. And so there's not really a spot that he's, you know, they can put him in there, but they're not really going to gain much. Sometimes what you see the team do when guys are struggling, they'll drop him. They'll move him around the order, give him a day or two off. They've done that. Yeah. And anybody in the minor leagues you see, Terry, that you like that could be a temporary solution for a week
or big, two. You know, the big one that's playing well, he's not on the 40-man roster, so they'd have to make a move, but that's Will Brennan. And I did write about him a little bit in the spring in my notes because a couple times I saw him play, you know, he reminded me kind of a little bit bigger physical version of Kwan. He made a lot of contact, college player, Kansas State, you know, seemed pretty mature. I mean, right now, wow, he's hitting 375 and 144 at-bats at Columbus. He's got 30 RBIs in 34 games at Columbus. And previously, he was hitting over 300 at Akron. Let's get his combined stats. He's 24 years old. He is playing center field. I don't think he's that good out there. But when you look at it, all right, how about this? He has 69 RBIs in 70 minor league games between Akron and Columbus this year. Doesn't hit a ton of homers, seven homers. But the OPS is 934, batting 344. You know, for his career, he's an exactly 300 minor league hitter.
So is it worth bringing him up?
Yeah.
For a short stint. I mean, we're a week and a half away from the All-Star break here, Terry, just to help give the team a little bit of a different.
I'd rather have him than Oscar Mercado.
Yeah, I mean, they know what Oscar Mercado can do at this point. Yeah. I think they like having him on the roster, but in terms of an everyday outfielder.
Well, they're probably thinking Brennan's a left-handed hitter. You know, Mercado batted right, but I guess I would argue, so what? It really depends on what you're doing. I'm looking at AAA, you know, I'm sorry. Brennan's hitting 300 against lefties in the minors. So I don't know. If you're talking about production, he's 24 years old. He played at Kansas State. He was an eighth round pick. You got to look at it. You really have to look at it. And just because he wasn't on those high prospect lists, much like Oscar, if you play your way on it, well, heck, Kwan wasn't either. Let's go with production. Now, I know some of the fans will want Nolan Jones, and he's played some outfield and first base. You know, he's been a hot prospect. He's sort of the opposite of those guys. He was a top pick in the 2000 he was in the second round pick in the 2016 draft. He's at AAA this year. Really, this is the first time he started to show something in the minors where, you know, that you could really get excited about, because he started the year on the injured list. Like last year, for example, let's go there. Like 2021, he played the entire year at AAA. This is Nolan Jones, batted 238. 13 homers, 48 RBIs, 787 OPS. Now, he was only 22 there, but still nothing to jump up and down. This year, he was hurt in spring. And then all of a sudden, you look at this year, and he's hitting, you know, 314 and with the OPS of 935. So, he's only at 86 at bats. I mean, that's the other option, but I'd rather go to Brennan and let Jones just play more.
Well, it's really going to be fascinating, Terry, to see how they handle this next week and a half. I mean, you're in a situation here where it could go from a 4.5 game deficit to 8. Mm-hmm. And by the time you hit the All-Star break, and then you're really facing an uphill battle. If they can keep it around 3 to 5 games, they're in really good position going to the second half of the season. But this is it's a pretty pivotal stretch. They have, they've got 4 games at Kansas City. I'm sorry, they have a weekend series at Kansas City, and then they come back home for 4 against the White Sox and 4 against the Tigers, and then it's the All-Star break. So that's 11 pretty important games right there heading into the All-Star break, and I'm really curious to see what they're going to do, stand pat or bring somebody up for a look. We shall see. So
Brennan's the guy that makes sense, David, just because he's got a lot more minor league experience. Now, granted – Nolan Jones is also 24, but as I said, he's coming off the injury, and I just would feel much better about them going with Brennan, who's older, and let Jones just play more. They got to figure out because Jones was originally a third baseman. You know, that's not where he's going to play now. They're playing him some in the outfield, and, you know, primarily right field, it looks like, is what he's been playing. And so that's a possibility there. But I liked Brennan when I saw him in spring training. I've liked a little bit I've seen of him. He looks just like a mature hitter. He reminds me kind of a different version of Kwan, a little bigger. But think about that. I mean, I don't really want to see Ernie Clement play the outfield anymore. I know he's right-handed, and that's why they're doing it. But I'd rather see Will Brennan, even if it's against a lefty pitcher. I mean, so what?
All right, Terry. Last game in Detroit today, then Kansas City, the White Sox, Tigers, All-Star break. So we shall see what develops there. So, hey, let's get into the Browns, Terry. You got a really interesting question from a gentleman named Mark Goro last few days, and I wanted to kind of spend a few minutes talking about it here. He says, I believe GM Andrew Berry and coach Kevin Stefanski absolutely would have been on the hot seat this year if they didn't upgrade at QB. You don't want your ceiling to be the Tannehill-led Titans. Not a single person is picking that team to win the AFC because of their QB. Thoughts? And you kind of went into some interesting research about the Titans, what the Titans are, how they've done in the playoffs, and what does it mean to the Browns? Would the Browns have looked like that if they didn't try to upgrade it at quarterback? Talk about the Titans a little bit, Terry.
Well, the big thing when you look at the Titans versus the Browns is the fact that the Titans are a lot better and have been better for the last 3 years. And they've been better really since they put Ryan Tannehill in at quarterback and benched Marcus Mariota. I mean, how about this? Tannehill, in his first 6 years with Miami, had a 42-46 record. You know, what? It's not always all on the quarterback, but that's significant. He goes to the Titans, plays in a very similar offense to what the Browns run. In regular season, 30-13. He's completed 67% of his passes. How about this? 76 TDs to 27 interceptions. I mean, those are big-time numbers. But they struggled in the playoffs. You know, the first year they went to the conference finals, the last few years they get knocked out in the first round. And I'm sure in Tennessee, what are they saying in Tennessee, do you think?
Not good enough.
Not good enough. We just had a better quarterback. You get over that. And that's probably the case unless you have Patrick Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or, you know, a couple of these others. When you fall short, then you're just saying, well, the missing ingredient is another quarterback. And I mean, the Browns, maybe because of the one season they had, said that. But so they went there. But I don't believe, because his thing, his premise of the question was, do you think they would have been on the hot seat if they hadn't done this? I mean, I guess maybe, you know, if it was a disaster, maybe Kevin Stefanski would. I don't think Barry would have.
Well, it is. You were saying before, it is kind of two separate questions, Terry. If you take the hot seat thing out of it, my thing that I'm curious about is, do you think Browns fans would have been happy if this was the Browns, where they go 9-7, 11-5, 12-5? I mean, they are very similar. I mean, yeah. The Titans are coached by Mike Vrabel, who's a Walsh Jesuit graduate, went to Ohio State, played at Ohio State. Tough running game with Derrick Henry, which mirrors what the Browns like to do. A quarterback who makes good throws, doesn't necessarily win games for you. Do you think Browns fans would have been happy being the Titans of these last few years, going 9-7, 11-5, 12-5, making the playoffs, maybe not winning it? Is that not good enough here too?
Probably not, but I would have been pretty pleased with it.
And so beyond that, what we're saying is that the Browns, and you wrote about this, Terry, about a month ago, about they looked at what they were doing offensively and have decided to revamp their passing game because they realize with this quarterback play and with this offense, they're not going to get where they want to go.
Yeah.
And so where we're at, right?
I mean, that's one of the big differences is that, you know, Baker's had – it's a weird career to judge Baker's because he's been in the league 4 years. 18, he's good as a rookie. 19, he's awful. 20, he's good and they get to the playoffs. 21, he's awful. Now, you could say 21, he's awful because he was hurt. You could say 2019, he was awful because of Freddie Kitchens and just that stuff going on. But the fact is, it's been up and down. And where I look at Tannehill at Tennessee, he's had some playoff failures, but he's been good since he got in there. And then you sit there, if not Ryan Tannehill, I mean, we've been sitting here even for a while, if not Baker, who, and that led them on the pursuit of Deshaun Watson. So that's, you know, that's what's going on. And frankly, if you're Carolina, for example, and you got Sam Darnold, you know, I still hear they're trying to get Baker, you know, this, the never ending talks, and Mary Kay's been writing that for a while. And I wouldn't be surprised if that happens, you know, before training camp. And you know, there is some talk about Seattle or whatever, but you know, because if you say never Sam Darnold, you go, I'll take a shot at Baker. You're always trying to get better unless you have an elite quarterback. But I don't know. What do you think, David? I mean, if you were the Titans, how would you feel?
I would feel like I would need to upgrade a quarterback too. I mean, Ryan Tannehill is not the kind of guy who's going to – you watched those playoff games last year, Terry. There were quarterbacks making out-of-this-world plays to win games down the stretch. And Ryan Tannehill doesn't make those kind of plays. I just don't think he does. And he's had some good receivers down there and a great running game. And I just wonder how long they're going to stick with him, because I don't think he's going to get them there. I just don't.
Probably isn't. That's when you're there. Then you say, if not him, who? I mean, and then I got a guy named James Russell sends me a thing, says, well, the Browns need to bring in a legitimate quarterback to salvage the season. You know, who could it be? So I looked at the list of free agents. Boy, that is really talk about Passy, et cetera. And then, you know, Tums and everything else.
Well, I'm no expert on the Titans, Terry. I would suspect they're going to try for one more year with this current setup. Next year's quarterback class is amazing. With Stroud and Bryce Young, and those are just the top. Those guys will be in the top three probably. And it's a really great quarterback class, and I wonder if they would reset if they don't get over the top.
And maybe they do, and you could get something for Tannehill.
And the Browns decided to not wait.
Yeah, because think about that. You know, if you're Carolina or Seattle or whatever, Ryan Tannehill will look really good. I mean, had the Browns traded Baker Mayfield for Ryan Tannehill, for example, I think I'd have been okay with that. I would have not a great upgrade, but I would have viewed it as an upgrade.
All right. Hey, Terry, let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we will get into the Cavaliers. We had a busy week when I was off here. They did a lot of things, brought in some really good veteran fits. We can get into that a little bit. We'll talk about your faith column this week. And, we got some Hey Terry questions, too, we'll get into, including restaurants in Kansas City. So we'll get into that. We'll be right back on Terry's Talking.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, we're back on Terry's Talking for the second half of today's podcast. Terry, hey, there was a few things you were kind of talking about during the break about you wanted to revisit about the Browns-Titans comparison, and I want to let you kind of have your say here.
And where I think it was a more of a comparison, but it got in a different area, was that when the Browns of the late 80s wrote about this in Vintage Browns, okay, plug warning, but it's true that, how Marty Schottenheimer, instead of Bernie taking the fall, Marty Schottenheimer took the fall for not getting to the Super Bowl and then getting knocked out early in the playoffs. So you either go after the coach, after the quarterback, or both when you get close but frustrated. And so, and it's always a little danger, because then after that, you watch what happened to the Browns. You know, they went into the abyss, with Belichick and then no quarterback, and Bernie's falling apart. It's always a difficult thing. And look, the Browns swung for the fences with Deshaun Watson. They're going to get him. They're going to pay whatever it takes to get him. They decided no matter what, Baker's out. Baker's not coming back. And fans, I expect at some point Baker to be traded, probably to Carolina, before training camp starts. They've been working on this stuff forever. You hear Seattle, but Carolina's been the one that's the most interested. And I expect that to happen. Now, I'm not saying it's going to happen in the next 10 minutes, maybe not even the next 10 days. But we're on July 7th. When's the training camp start? The 27th?
3 weeks from today.
I bet within two weeks it's done. I really do. Because if you're Carolina, you've seen enough of Sam Darnold. And if you're Carolina, I got to get Baker in here. And if I could do it for some mid-round draft pick and, that. The one thing I did here, and I was wrong on this, and Murray Kay wrote this early on, that the Browns have no interest in Sam Darnold in that trade coming back. So that part, you know, I suggested it in that, and they looked at it, and they just don't. They'd rather shop around for somewhere else. But I'm not predicting, again, this is not saying this thing's happening, you know, overnight or whatever, but that's going to happen. And because pretty much, unless you have one of the top 7 or 8 quarterbacks, you're probably always looking for a better quarterback. That's my point. And then you're probably always looking for a better coach if you get stuck in that thing of, and is, you know, you kind of feel bad. I mean, Vrabel's really done a good job there. I mean, there they go, 10-5, 12-5, and they lose to the Bengals 19-16 in the first round. And then you turn around, you look back up, you know, we lost to the team that went to the Super Bowl. That's who knocked us out. And so
by 3 points.
Yeah, by 3 points. And then you know, look the year before, they played the Ravens. They lost 20-13. Now, you could look at that and say, in those two games, we couldn't score 20 points. So that's always the, you know, there's always a thing there. But I just wish, I'm very serious, David. I would want, they haven't had 2 winning seasons in a row since the late 80s. Can we just underline that? They have not had 2 winning seasons in a row since the late 80s. It's mind-boggling.
Impressive when you think about it.
It's just mind-boggling. And we're talking about a team that's had 3 in a row, you know, and that. Granted, that's frustrating, but this is bad. I'll take good and frustrating over bad with the hope of, okay, maybe do this or that, you know, to try and get a little better.
Yeah, but we've heard Kevin Stefanski, you know, when the Browns were in the playoffs a couple of years ago, Kevin Stefanski said he went from we're taking it a game at a time during the regular season to we're in the playoffs, we can win this whole thing.
Yeah.
And his approach is once we get in, we're going for it. And I think that's kind of a microcosm of what the Browns are doing here. They're like,
yeah, right.
We're close, we're in this, we're in contention, we're going to go for it. And
right.
So that's why the Watson deal happened. And
yeah, I think, and then we'll see how really it pans out. See, to me, that you know, I would, a variety of reasons, I just didn't like it. I'm not going to reiterate, go through them all again. But I'll tell you, I will go back again. All right, I promised I wouldn't take the Case Keenum horse out of the stall one more time for a ride around the track. But I'll go back there, and I still think they would have won 2 more games with that guy instead of Baker playing all hurt and banged up. And you might have got in the playoffs, and then you say, we don't know what will happen because you get in the playoffs. Instead, we watched all this stuff with Baker. And, you know, the other thing it did, it just drove Baker's trade value into the ground, too.
All right. 3 weeks from today is training camp, Terry, and we'll move on to that. Boy, it's hard to believe it's already
– yep, creeping.
3 weeks away it's happening. So, and their fans are going to be allowed out there, full training camp. So check all that out on cleveland.com if you're interested in going out. Usually a good time, a lot of autographs and stuff. So, Terry, the Cavaliers have been very busy. Lots of roster changes, and everybody kind of knew they needed to shore up the point guard spot. They started with Darius Garland, gave him a 5-year, $191 million max contract. Let's talk about that first, and then we can get into the free agents they brought in. This deal could be worth $231 million, largest contract in Cavs history. This had to be done, right?
Oh, sure. You want to lock him up. I equate all this together in one whole approach to the point guard position. You started with Garland, and in fact, you have nobody close to being able to replace him, nor would you want to try and change that position because he's still only 22, going on 23, and his rise has been incredible from he statistically, on all his analytics, was the worst player in the NBA as a rookie. So he was pretty good as a second year. To third year, he made an all-star team. And then they almost rode him into the ground. Talk about Baker being run on the ground. They're playing him over 38 minutes a game after the all-star break. So they looked at the entire point guard position, said, okay, we're going to lock up Darius, take care of that. Then we got to make sure we got him on a 5-year contract for all that money. We have to make sure that we don't play him 38 minutes a game. So we got to get some real depth at that position. That rolled into, all right, we're going to bring Rubio back, but he's had on his second ACL on the same knee, and that probably means he won't be back till December or January. So we're going to put him, not rush him, and then they brought in Raul Neto, who's okay. Kind of like, remember how Jose Calderon was when they brought him in towards the end of his career here? He'll get the ball up the floor. He'll set everybody up, kind of knows what he's doing. That kind of guy. So one, you don't have to play Garland all those minutes. Two, and Rubio doesn't have to rush back. So it was a total approach to that spot. Where last year, remember they had Rondo, that was terrible, and they had a kid whose name I forgot that they picked up from Atlanta in the G League, and Goodwin was his name, I believe. And you know, you just the moment Garland out of the game, there's a big drop off. But Rubio was there early on. Just the opposite, you know. He played well with Garland. He played well without him. So I like what they did. The whole approach to the position.
Yeah, and last year you could tell, Terry, when Rubio was out there, things looked like they ran smoothly.
Yeah.
And when he went out, they didn't. The ball was sticking, and I think and you've talked to some people about Raul Neto on this too, that he's not just a guy you plug in there. That he actually makes things run smoothly. He's not just a guy. Mm-hmm. That the offense can run with him, not through him and by
yeah,
him.
Yeah, I mean, he's, and
the ball doesn't
sit
with him. Yeah.
Yeah, he has been, you know, he's been a starter and coming off the bench. And I believe I'm getting his numbers up right now, but I believe he's been in the league for 8 years. And so I'm looking here. You know, he's been in the league 8 years. He has started 98 games. You know, so, I mean, last year, he started 19 games for the for Washington, 7.5 points, shot 46%. The one thing that fell off, he had been a pretty good like 3-point shooter before this, almost 37%. He shot only 29%, but you know he played 20 minutes a game. He's just solid. You know, I like him for this kind of a spot. Basically, I had one executive tell me, he goes, he's your ideal third point guard who could fill in if somebody gets hurt. He goes, but he's not bad for what they're doing. And then you just don't want to rush Rubio back. He's 30 years old, so he's got a lot of experience.
Yeah, and the thing, we've talked on this podcast about teams building culture. J.B. Bickerstaff wants the offense to run a certain way, and now
yes.
He's got three guys who can help it run a certain way instead of, all right, well, Rajon Rondo's in there. It's going to have to look like this or whatever. These guys all kind of play the same way.
You can't, and they just have a bunch of guys going one-on-one. And that happens some too. That's where they'll have to look at. I just don't see how you convert and Sexton on the same team because their styles are similar. LeVert's taller, but they both are guys that they can, you know, they can score, but they're not going to really equate with a lot of ball movement. And secondly, if you have a bunch of big guys, I remember Wayne Embry said to me, once he said, and Wayne, former NBA center, and then later was the GM of the Cavs, he said, you got to remember the one thing about a big guy. He said, unless it's Magic Johnson or somebody like that, you're not just bringing the ball up the court and creating your own shot. You need somebody to throw it to you, and you have to have a coach that has at least half a clue on how to get the ball to your big guys. So if you really want to maximize, I mean, for example, Jared Allen shoots 70% from the field, 70%. Find ways to get him the ball. And he's good at the foul line. He shoots like about 70% there. And then you saw, too, what Mobley can do. And, you know, Markkanen likes to shoot from the outside, but even he has some post moves. So all this is – I like, by the way, they brought in Lopez. That's a good one. He's a big guy, knocks around people, you know, kind of fits what they do. And, you know, I'm encouraged. I'm not saying it's great, but they're nice. That you talk about culture. These were moves that they made that fit for what they're doing. It's not just let's just bring in guys and sort through them. And of course, Obagi is a 22-year-old. I'm still shocked they took a 4-year player. I'm so glad they did, but I'm shocked. It goes against all their analytics and everything else. And I think when you're talking in the middle of the first round, look, this guy makes 3-pointers. He's a high achiever. Overachiever, I may add, because I did a story with Daniel Robinson, the new coach at Cleveland State. And Daniel, for the last, I think, 7 years, was in Iowa State, same Big 12 where Obagi was at Kansas. And I said, did you even see him play in high school? I said, I did. He goes, he was just sort of an athlete. You know, he didn't see the shooting. said Kansas kind of took him at the end, almost like it was a local guy, because he was from the area there. And he said, remember, they even redshirted him in the beginning of the year, and then a bunch of guys got hurt, and he worked his way in the lineup. He said, we were all shocked. I looked it up. He wasn't rated like a top 100 prospect. He wasn't a typical Kansas prospect. And then he ended up this – every year he got better. He said the big thing his senior year is he took leadership of that team. He says that's what we noticed, the big difference. And he carried them, you know, to the national title. Not being great, but just overall being good and strong in terms of team culture.
Yeah, and Lopez is the same way. A great reputation in the locker room.
Yeah,
like you said, they're not just grabbing guys based on their stats and saying, "Oh, we'll plug them in." This is culture, and it's about building a locker room that can travel together, play together, win together. So,
yeah, as opposed to like what I'm so. I'm by the way, I'm very amused on watching the Brooklyn Nets just dismantle themselves. And I'm writing a column about this for later in the week. You'll like this, but. One of the things the Nets did in their desperation, remember, was they traded for James Harden and all this. And Kobe Altman got the Cavs in that deal. And that deal, which was they traded Dante Exum and a first round pick from Milwaukee, and they picked up Jared Allen, and they picked up Taurean Prince, who they turned into Ricky Rubio. Thank you, Brooklyn.
One of the deals of the last 5 years.
Yeah.
In the whole league. So, Terry, real quick, if you were mentioning how LeVert or Sexton won't be around probably next season, if you have to pick one of those guys, who are you keeping and why?
I'm hesitating because I guess it depends on the cost. I'm just kind of looking at it for this upcoming year. On Sexton, I would just offer him the qualifying offer of like $7.8 million or whatever that is. You know, LeVert's making like $18 million this year. I would have been interested in trying to trade him like for Mike Conley or somebody like that, you know, from Utah. I don't know if they offered that or they might have, it just didn't get anywhere. But they're both going to be, you know, free agents a year from now. Either way, you know, you're coming off the bench, especially if it's Sexton. Sexton Garland thing is not good together, but Sexton off the bench for 20 minutes or so, I think could be useful. But I still think they could end up making a sign and trade with Sexton at some point. So that's the problem. It's not just player versus player. You got money involved and that kind of stuff. LeVert struggled with the Cavs last year, but I do like the fact he has some size. I think he could defend some. He might be better this time around. He's been a productive player. By the way, he was in that trade too, that Harden trade. Brooklyn traded him. I mean, it's a crazy thing to look back at all of that. So they end up with those guys from that deal.
All right, and Sexton did get a qualifying offer last week, if I remember.
Yes.
And so the paperwork's all been done on that. So, all right, Terry, let's get into your faith column a little bit. You received an email from a guy you're calling Ed. That's not his real name. And he wrote to you about his wife who has a brain injury. And he wrote to you about the struggles he has just on a day-to-day basis, taking care of her, communicating with her. And your faith column, which will be on cleveland.com Saturday and in the Plain Dealer on Sunday this week, gets into kind of working your way through that when you're a caregiver and kind of finding moments in that. Why don't you talk about that column a little
It's a
bit.
Challenge for anybody who's been in a caregiving situation. And I've been that with my father, and it's to a lesser extent now with my mom, the African-American lady, Melva Hardison, who's 96. And, you know, you go up and down with that stuff. And sometimes you just feel like I am just so tired of doing this. And difficult thing for Ed is that his wife has aphasia, short-term memory and communication problems, saying the wrong words, and just the frustrations people go through. And I know that a significant part of our audience is involved in this, you know, elder care or the sandwich generation. They have someone older, and then they have kids too that they're dealing with. So I just kind of wanted to bring that out. And also let caregivers know sometimes you're tired, you're frustrated. Don't beat yourself up. You can't always – I say oftentimes the question comes to you in a caregiving thing. Well, see, if I pick this, A, that's bad. B, that's not very good at all. C, I doubt that'll work, or D, do nothing. I mean, that's sometimes how you feel in that. And you, there aren't good choices. And you're just kind of, as I, Psalm 23 says, though I walk through the shadow of the valley of death, I will fear no evil because you walk with me. Everybody's going through that shadow of the valley, and there will be doubts during that time. So that's a lot of what I wrote about.
And I really loved how, as you came to terms with kind of helping your father through this time, you started to appreciate some moments like watching a sunset. I think you read about how you were, you're on a pier with him watching a sunset, and you kind of, it kind of was like a peace seems like it settled over you. Is that a good way to put it?
Yeah, you start to find the things the you can do, you know, because we so dwell on what we can't. Because my dad was down in Florida, and we had home health care there set up. My brother was helping some. And then I would go down every month for 3 to 5 days and give everybody time off and take them. And like, he liked to go to the airport. We put him in the wheelchair. He had a stroke and that, and just kind of go down to the Sarasota airport, which is kind of a cool, smaller airport, and get some ice cream and watch the planes and the people. Go to the mall sometimes. Go out to one of the docks, which was handicap accessible. You know, find things like that along watching games. You do what you can, but it's like, it is really, David, it's tough if you haven't been there. I mean, this guy was a strong, you know, he played minor league baseball for a year, World War II, worked in the warehouse, and there he is with the stroke, unable to talk. It does break your heart, but you also just find good moments, and that's the way to get through it.
All right, be sure to read that this weekend. Definitely worth your time. So, all right, we have some Hey Terry questions. You ready?
Yes.
This one is from Bruce in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. He says, hey, Terry, I'm planning a baseball trip to Kansas City in September to watch the Guardians and the Royals. I know Kansas City is known for steak, my favorite meal. Can you recommend a favorite restaurant of yours out there? Maybe ask Hoynesy.
Well,
since he probably travels more than you.
Yes, a lot more, and he has been there a lot. I mentioned Arthur Bryant's, the rib place, but you said you got some from Hoynes, so let's defer to Paul.
Yeah, so I did shoot Hoynesy a note on this, and so Bruce, he says that he's not been to a ton of steak places, but he loves to go to barbecue places out there. He says Q39 is one that he goes to, and it's in an old gas station.
Okay.
He also talked about Arthur Bryant's, which you just mentioned, Terry, and also Joe's and Gates. Gates Barbecue is famous.
Gates is really good. Yeah. That, I was trying when you mentioned that before. That's who, in fact, I like Gates better than Arthur Bryant. I have not been there that lately. I mean, when I'm going to do a football trip, I fly in on Saturday to Kansas City. I go to church Saturday night somewhere. Frankly, just grab some takeout, eat it at home next morning, you know, have breakfast, and then go on to so, you know, we just kind of go from there.
All right. This one's from Jack in Erie, a longtime faithful listener. He says, hey, Terry, last week you mentioned the Guardians have no intention of making a move at catcher because they love the way their guys, quote, handle the staff. My question, why? This is a veteran staff. They're adults, and they're not knuckleball pitchers, and it's not like they've been the 95 Braves this season anyway, if the team was worried about upsetting things. It's not like any of the Cleveland catchers have the defensive ability of Sandy. Why not go out and get a catcher who isn't a black hole in the lineup and can do a comparable job behind the plate? So, okay. Terry, Luke Maley, batting 167 in 30 games. He's got 9 walks and 22 strikeouts. Hedges, 160 in 49 games, 10 walks, 40 strikeouts. And Sandy Leon is batting 091 in 7 games.
Yeah, but he's pitching.
But he is pitching, so there's that.
All right.
It's not easy to find a catcher, but these numbers are not good.
They're terrible. But the reason is this. Remember, this is what are they about, young players? Bo Naylor, brother of Josh, right now is hitting 282 between double A and triple A. He's just moved up to triple A Columbus. He's hitting 326. You know, he was the number one pick. He is the catcher of like 23, and maybe he is the catcher of 22 after the All-Star break. That's why I just think they figured we'd wait to see. You know, I'm looking at this. How about this? He is throwing out 37% of stealing base runners this year. For his career, is 35. You know, he's a guy that he's only 22. So I believe that's really why they are to say, well, just kind of slog through with the guys we have And then Naylor's going to be our guy. Because this year, remember, it's a lot about finding out about players or setting them up to get experience this year to roll into 23.
All right. But, you know, we talked about Miles Straw earlier, Terry. You have somebody who's struggling like him at the top half of the lineup, and then a catcher who's batting these numbers at the bottom. That makes for a rough go someday.
Yeah, you're paying the price on all this right now. Last time I looked, I mean, the average major league catcher was hitting .216. So it wasn't like this is a position there's a lot of power or punch going on. I mean, if you go back, you know, the guy that Guardians had, and they just let him go, is Haas, who's with the Tigers now. Now, he wasn't as good defensively, Eric Haas, as some of their guys, but, you know, since he's gone to Detroit, you know, he with the Tigers now, he has 543 at-bats. He's hit 29 homers, 83 RBIs, best 228. You know, that's a guy that they did have here, and they just got him kind of stuck behind Roberto Perez and Hedges. So they lost him. He became a minor league free agent. He signed elsewhere. I'm looking, he's throwing out 28% of the base runners, which isn't too bad. So that was a catcher they had that they probably wish they had kept.
All right. Let's see here, Terry. We got one from Rudy W. And you were talking about Mayfield earlier. He has some points to make on Mayfield. Perhaps the reason Mayfield has not been traded is because if or when Watson gets suspended for all or most of the year, Mayfield becomes worth much more than a fifth round draft pick to the Browns. Having Mayfield for 2022 is a win for the Browns and Mayfield for these reasons. Number one, if Brissett flounders or gets injured, we have a legitimate backup. Number two, not jeopardizing a Super Bowl caliber roster in 2022. Number three, Mayfield could enhance his trade value and or free agency value to himself and the team. Number four, fans and players would appreciate a temporary reconciliation. Number five, a healthy Mayfield with two capable offensive tackles. Not having his left arm strapped to his side would be better than last year. Let them compete and play the best player. I think he's talking about Brissett and Mayfield there. The objective here is to simply win games. This ship has sailed, has it not, Terry?
Yes. The number six, he's going to get traded. That's what I believe. So I just think they've been working on this forever. There's been too much smoke, and I just think he's going to get traded.
And bringing him back is not a good idea.
If you're going to do that, you should have brought him into your rookie camps and all that. I mean, when you tell a guy under contract, no, we don't want you, stay home, you know, it's different than what the other positions, like if you're a receiver even, or this is a guy that you have to get other players to follow you. I mean, a lot of guys will tell you and different, you know, boy, that receiver, he's a diva. I don't particularly like him, but, you know, he catches balls and I don't really have to deal with him. But everybody's got an offense has to deal with the quarterback, and the quarterback has to deal with the coaches, and Baker needs out of here. They need to come up, but they got to do. So I'll tell you one thing. They trade Baker. They better get somebody else like Joshua Dobbs. You can't do that as your backup to Jacoby Brissett. You cannot do that. If your object is to win, and I'm with him on that, you got to do better than Joshua Dobbs.
All right, Terry, last one here. And this is from Kathleen Thompson, longtime listener.
Yeah.
Oh, I kind of asked you this question before, but this is specifically about Sexton. He says, what are your thoughts on Colin Sexton? Do you think he'll be with the Cavs this upcoming season? I mean, if we take LeVert out of the equation, if it's just Sexton, you think he'll be around?
Yeah, I keep going back and forth on that. Boy, it's a bad answer. But I'm saying that they end up working a sign and trade with him somewhere. But it might not be that what they like, you know, what Sexton wants. Our excellent basketball writer, Chris Feeder, says Sexton wants $20 million. Oh, my goodness. You know, that's you and I want hair, too. I mean, that's one of those.
That is a big
number.
We can
want all you want, but we shall see. I would like to have seen Sexton play, because remember, it was very odd to me, David, how he plays 11 games, has a meniscus tear, remember? And then usually that's not a season-ending injury. And right away they ruled him out for the whole year and that. So, and Sexton's a hard worker and all that. Those things. So I'm not faulting Sexton or whatever. I just kind of wonder how that knee really is.
Yeah. You wonder if it was the team healthy. that yeah, was the team kind of taking it slow, or was it Sexton's camp kind of not wanting to
risk
anything going into the offseason? I don't know.
That was a bit weird. Yeah. But if I were to guess, I think they might end up well, they're going to move here, LeVert. I just really believe that by opening day. May go to training camp, but see, we shall see.
All right. All right, Terry, that's going to do it. Thanks, everybody, for sending in your questions. If you want to send us a question for next week's podcast, you can send an email to sports@cleveland.com and put "Hey, Terry" or "Terry's Talking" in the subject line. We'll try and get it on next week's podcast. You can also find Terry on his Facebook page and send him a question there. So any final thoughts, Terry?
That is it. I mean, we covered a lot of ground, including restaurants in Kansas City.
We did. All right, everybody, have a great week. I hope you enjoyed the fourth, and we will talk to you next week on Terry's Talking.